All right, Mr. Fancy Book Club Man. Start our Fancy Book Club.
Yay! All right. So, welcome to the, I guess we could call it the Back Row Book Club. Yeah? No? Too much alliteration?
Back Row Book Club. The Back Row Barista Book Club. There you go.
Did used to make coffee.
There you go.
All right. So, I guess this first one, spoilers, obviously, because we're just going to assume you've read this. So if you haven't and you want to read it, read the book and then listen to this. We are talking about Patrick Rothfuss's 2007 fantasy novel, The Name of the Wind. It's volume one of the King Killer Chronicles. Did you have a subtitle for this book? Something you referred to it as in your head like I do?
For me, it was... I don't know, Much Ado About Love. This book really came across for me as a like a romance novel backwards.
Yeah, it really does. It's a really odd thing he's done. My subtitle, which I'm not going to do subtitles for these like I do with regular episodes, because I don't think this is a regular episode. The subtitle for me would have to be The Adventures of Captain Nice Guy, : The Fedora Awakens.
Oh, God. That's pretty good.
Because, yeah, right? Like, isn't the main character, he's kind of a Captain Nice Guy.
Yeah.
Like, throughout the entirety of the book. I didn't catch it on the first pass reading it, because, I don't know, I guess, so...
I definitely caught it a couple times where I felt like, you know, you have a writer's experience that comes from a certain place.
Yeah.
You know, like growing up. And for some of this novel, I felt like he was retroactively like making right like some of his young like romance travels.
Yeah.
It's The Adventures of Captain Nice Guy, it also comes across really strong as you know, the king of the friend zone. You know? Like, this is a novel for all the guys that were been friend zoned.
Yes.
But this guy ends up having, you know, awesome powers.
Yeah.
Et cetera. So he's like, yes, I'm friend zoned, but I'm amazing.
Yeah. Like so I have a bunch of notes here where I just, like, I'm not going to, unless we want to go to specific pages or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I have notes here like, not really likable as a protagonist. His flaws just make him irritating, like an internet nice guy. So yeah, like normally I like fantasy novels,
mm-hmm.
right? I read this for the first time after completing a graduate program where for 2.5 years I was just reading nonfiction social sciencey texts.
Mm-hmm.
And I think I forgot what it was like to read fiction again. And mm-hmm. so the first time I read it, I was like, oh, this is a fun novel. Like, it's goofy and dumb, but you know, it's fun. And then I lent it to you. And then we talked about doing this and maybe using it for the book.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And so you gave it back to me and I read it again. And I was just cringing the entire time going, oh, Jesus, I hope Richard does not think that I have this one type of book that I'm interested in, because I want to get it out there first. On second read, I don't really like this book.
Yeah. Well, I think especially with fiction, there is a time where you can read something in a certain place and just enjoy it, and it's a consumable.
Yeah.
And then there's, on retrospect, when you're actually trying to analyze something and go through and, like, beat the shit out of a book. Like, you can do that with a lot, you know. And sometimes a flawed character, like in The Gatsby, is used for, a particular purpose.
Sure.
And in analysis and retrospect now, it's like, oh, well, look at all these things, like, this communicates through the character and talking about the times and...
Yeah, well, I mean, so, like, his... Like, Voth's flaws, they don't make him interesting. They don't add color to his character. His flaws are just reasons for him to be awesome in another aspect.
Mm-hmm.
Like, his whole thing of, like, well, I was raised in the Edema Ra, and they're discriminated against everywhere. Mm-hmm. But it means that I can make a shit ton of money and support myself being this awesome fucking rock out musician where I can like play, what did you say, like seven different harmonies on the lute at the same time yeah. while singing a different one. It's like, that's a little over the top. Like, you haven't played in years, guy. Like, yeah, I get that you've got to be the most awesome at whatever it is you do.
Uh-huh.
But, like, that doesn't make an interesting character for me, I guess.
Yeah, I think for me, the most interesting part of the book was definitely the most flawed portion, which was just him being raised, like, in the city and having to just, like, live through.
Oh, in Tarbin?
Yeah.
Like, after, yeah, okay.
And things just being shitty for him.
Yeah.
That was interesting. And then the other character that he met that was kind of, like, helpful, and the guy who I'm sure has a particular background that's kind of insinuated through his, through his gear and stuff. The one who takes care of all, like, the crippled young kids.
Oh, I forget his name, but yeah, yeah. He's, yeah.
And,
well, yeah, like, I kind of, like any good fantasy or sci-fi novel, I think this has really great world building. Like, it'd be fun. I think you were, we were texting at some point, and you said it'd be fun to play in this world.
Mm-hmm.
Like, a game set in this world.
Yeah.
I don't know if Rothfuss's writing is a good example of a story being told in this world, even yeah. though he created it, if that yeah. makes sense.
Well, I think you get that a lot with, even if you're reading a little bit of Robert Jordan, and you have the interesting cast of characters.
Right.
And basically, you know, he talked about it a bit himself. You know, well, you have like Matt Cawthon or like Rand, you know, you have the characters in, you know, the Wheel of Time series, and each one is kind of like a schism of his own, like, psyche, like his own personality.
Oh, sure.
And so then that can be interesting, except for, you know, Perrin, like, the first four books, he's not doing jack shit.
They are just morons.
He's being a wet blanket.
First, like, four books.
Well, that's fine, because they're, like, young, and
yeah, they haven't seen the world.
Matt's kind of an asshole, but you're like, yeah, I kind of get where Matt's coming around. He just doesn't want to deal with all this shit.
Yeah.
He just wants to, like, chill. You know, and hang out with chicks.
Yeah.
But basically what I was trying to say is that you can, from a writer's standpoint, they always, like, the book's animated with their own mind. So a lot of their personality, a lot of their history, you know, and then a lot of their own flaws can be in there, and that can make it interesting.
Yeah.
Or they can kind of, like, reconstruct, like, their flaws, and they can get to, like, make right,
yeah.
you know, things that bad happened to them and capacities that they think they had, but they never really got to take advantage of.
Sure.
And so you can see a character that has flaws, but then they're built up into this awesome thing. But really you're seeing the author himself, like, rewriting his own person.
Yeah. So. Yeah. I wouldn't be surprised if he was in it, like, a failed band in college or something, and mm-hmm. thought that he was just, like, the most awesome coffee shop.
Yeah.
Guitarist.
So basically, we're just starting this podcast, but just ripping this guy who's actually had the audacity to, like, write a book.
Yeah, fuck you for doing a thing you like.
Yeah. Fuck you for being successful at it, man.
No, so. Well, I think any, like, if we're analyzing a book, criticizing it does mean tearing it to shit.
Mm-hmm.
And it's painful and it hurts, especially because I know that people are going, I mean, this was like a breakout novel. Like, I wouldn't be surprised if anyone even listens to this, that they'll, like, just send hate emails.
Yeah.
Like, you're wrong and you don't know what you're talking about.
I mean, I definitely, to cut back, I enjoyed the book, and there's yeah. a lot of different little sections and aspects of it that I thought were really cool and interesting. It's just, we're kind of just talking about the protagonist himself.
Yeah.
Which I think that's what we're focusing on kind of in this conversation. So.
Yeah. Like the main character, and, you know, this is not a completed series yet either. Like, he's written this book, the next book club book, I think, will be Wise Man's Fear, which is book two, and or day two, because it's a story in story, like, framing device.
Mm-hmm.
And then day three hasn't come out yet.
Yeah.
He wrote a novella focusing on Ori that okay. I have not read, but I think I want to pick it up at the library because I saw that they had a copy.
Mm-hmm.
It's a novella. It's super short. And like I said, I like the world he set it in. I don't think I like the main character.
Yeah.
Because, you know, I like the inclusion of Bast. Mm-hmm. I like the Chronicler.
Yeah.
I think he's an interesting character.
Yeah.
It's just the main one. And
it really, like, the Chronicle, would like to talk about that. The Chronicle is very flawed.
Yeah.
Like, he's not a perfect human, and he does, like, dumb things, but that makes him interesting to watch.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and interesting when he does things and, like, his interactions.
He recognizes that Bast is not a human, and he, like, immediately grabs some iron to fuck with a fae.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's really cool. No one can see what I did. I just kind of shrugged my shoulders and was like, hey, let's do this.
Yeah, we'll put in a shrug shoulder sound right there. Yeah.
Or maybe it should be a Howard Dean scream, like a, yeah!
Yeah. I'm thinking like a creaky kind of door thing, so your shoulders, so your joints are just like, yeah! There you go. Perfect.
But, I mean, on the other hand, because he's such a, what is the term for a male Mary Sue? Is it Marty Sam? Or a Morty Stan, or I
think you should make one up.
I'm just calling him a Mary Sue.
Mm-hmm. A sassy Samson.
Sassy Samson. I like that. I'm not 100% sure that he isn't just some random liar that the Chronicler has. I mean, because he obviously, he has some skill. Like, his character's probably been to the university.
Mm-hmm.
But because he's telling his story, and he's shown to be an elaborate storyteller, I'm pretty sure, like, he's just some con man that's embellishing his own story.
Oh, you mean the main
Kvoth? Yeah, because he's telling the story to this Chronicler,
yeah.
And these stories have been blown out of proportion.
Mm-hmm.
But we see, even when he's a university student, he gets with his roommate and his friends and spread a bunch of rumors about
himself. Yeah, to plant some stories, yeah.
Yeah, to make himself sound more awesome.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm not 100% sure that he isn't still just doing that.
Yeah, and I think in retrospect, once you probably have all the completed works,
yeah,
you can kind of go back.
Sure.
And maybe that'll be part of the narrative.
Yeah. I mean, I think that would be, that's a huge leap, and I would be surprised if Patrick Rothfuss does that, because...
Well, you think he's gonna Shyamalan all of us?
Where are you in the second book?
I barely started.
Oh, you barely started it?
Yeah, I just barely started it.
Yeah, then I won't spoil anything from you. But, yeah, so...
He's gonna Shyamalan us, basically.
Yeah, he's gonna Shyamalan us. Like, he's just gonna keep doing the same old thing.
No, I mean, at the end, he's just going to, like, erase everything he did in one form.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Like, the guy, anyways, I think we'll, we can kind of, like, it's a whole book. It's, you know, hundreds of pages, so we can kind of get lost in little tracks in the
details. Yeah.
So is there a next kind of, I think we beat up the protagonist.
So let's beat up the protagonist. So Ambrose, his main rival at the school, the Draco Malfoy of this school.
Ambrose is even kind of interesting.
I think he's interesting. He's written and he's portrayed by Kvoth in telling this story as such a shit. Like, like no one could be this horrible of a person.
I don't know.
I mean,
I don't know.
I mean, maybe, but like he goes out of his way to be an asshole, but the main character also goes out of his way to be an asshole.
Yeah, so it's pretty fair.
Yeah, but like they... The links that they go to mess with each other, it's kind of unrealistic and unnecessary, I think.
You know?
I mean, because it's pretty far-fetched that if Kvoth is supposed to be as smart as he is, why would he think it's okay to go into an archive with an open flame?
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, the kind of the cover for that is, you know, he's kind of...
Yeah, I know he's dazed.
He's dazed
and hasn't had sleep and stuff, but with fire near paper in a society where fire is near things, like, I think that would be more plausible, someone doing that and not thinking about it today, because we have resources like firefighters and smoke alarms.
Well, I mean, like, in thinking about that, my answer to that would really be, I've done much dumber stuff. Like, easily. Way too much.
Well, okay, no. All right. So maybe that's not a good example. Yeah, I mean, just Ambrose is just such a roundabout, unbelievably antagonistic person.
See, the thing is, though, how much experience do you have with bullies? Like personal experience.
Personal experience? I mean, I've always been a bigger kid, so like it, like in middle school, I had a bully that would like fuck with me and stuff, and I had detention for about a week because he was fucking with me on the bleachers during a pep rally, and so I turned around and I punched him in the chest and he fell off bleachers and broke his arm.
Oh, sweet.
And then he didn't fuck with me anymore because yeah. I punched him off a set of bleachers, which I'm lucky he just broke his arm as an adult, mm-hmm. I realize. I mean, usually if you do something like that, I would think that someone doesn't keep fucking with you.
Yeah.
I guess I haven't really been bullied that often. So
I'm trying to go back in my mind and think about bullies. And the thing about it is, like, with Ambrose, I feel like he's not always consistently on him. Like, he just takes out hits. Like, there's retaliatory hits to try to hit on there, you know, really strong. And
but, like, okay, so an example that just occurred.
Mm-hmm.
When he finds a place to stay and play music, Ambrose goes through the motions through... Well, and it could be that this is how Kvothe sees it, and this didn't actually happen. Pretty sure it probably happened, unless he's embellishing. Where he sets up several shell companies and gives other nobles money and shit to buy places that would employ him and then shut them down.
Mm-hmm.
That's ridiculous. Like, that's cartoonishly evil. That is not something that real people do.
Well, I think he shuts down one of the places. Like, I remember there was one place that he ended up shutting down. The rest of them he bought outright.
Right.
Put new management in them. Right. And then the new management was like, no.
Right. But that's what I'm saying. Yeah. Like, that takes an enormous amount. Like, I understand he's wealthy.
Mm-hmm.
That takes an enormous amount of resources to do. I really don't think that he could mobilize that many people in that short span of time. I can stretch my imagination for fantasy, but like that's a funny ha-ha in your head, wow, that sucks type thing. But if you look at it, I don't find that to be something that anyone would take the time to do, because that takes a lot of time, I would think.
It takes a lot of money, honestly.
Yeah, but a lot of time, too. Because, like, he doesn't want it to get out that it's back to him.
Mm-hmm.
So it could very easily be that Kvothe is conflating the two, because I don't think Ambrose ever says, yeah, haha, I did that.
Well, Ambrose doesn't really say he did a lot of stuff.
Yeah. Well, and I get that that's his character. I'm just saying that he's... it's a little unbelievable that he actually did that. I guess what I'm saying is Ambrose is potentially just another dude that he doesn't like.
I think for me, the unbelievable part of it would be possibly maybe the speed at which it would have occurred.
Yeah.
But as far as how big a dick someone can be when they have the means and power to do so, I could totally buy that. Yeah, totally. You're acting like everybody we meet are saints or like people don't do dickish things.
No, I'm not pretending like people don't do dickish things. I'm just saying it's unbelievable the extent that this guy goes out of his way to do dickish things.
I guess I have a lot of really shitty family, so I guess no, I'm like, yeah, I've seen shit like that.
Really?
Yes. Yes.
Because, I mean, like, I know people are shitty, but, like, what is the first thing that Kvothe... Because Kvothe fucks with him first. Like, he insults him to his face, and then, and Ambrose gives him the candle, sells him a candle. So Kvothe pays for the privilege of being kicked out of the archives for
What is it with Ambrose? Is it with him and that girl?
Yeah, he's
Is that when he initially does that?
Yeah, he's very like creepily hitting on.
Yeah, did that happen did something happen before, like an exchange, like in a lunchroom or something before that though?
No, like he walked up and wanted to be let in, and Ambrose said you're not on the
That's
list.
That's right. So they get off on the wrong foot right then.
Right.
Yeah.
But like, let's be real, like, Ambrose was doing his job. Like, I have people come up to me at work all the time and want special treatment, and it's like, I'm sorry that, like, there's a rule that keeps me from doing this because it gets out of hand. Because if you give someone an inch, they'll take a mile.
Yeah.
So, yeah, he's not letting someone into the archives if they're not on his sheet because they're not a student. Even if he's been accepted to the university, he doesn't have any proof of that.
Yeah.
So he can't let him
in. Well, initially he comes in right off the bat. Like, that's their first interaction. And he hasn't even applied. So he's trying to get into the archives, like, without even being applied or being a part of it or et cetera.
Right.
The second time he comes in, though, he has been accepted. And Ambrose knows he's been accepted. And I think, what's her name? The other girl.
Fella
comes in and helps him because she's like, yeah, this is just a formality. Like,
yeah.
And I think in that moment, Ambrose is just being an asshole. The first time, Ambrose is doing his job, calls him a little shit. The second time, Ambrose is just being an asshole. And I think, at least how it's described, he's just using his position of authority to, like, just shit on someone. Like, he's just being a dick. Like, they got off on the wrong foot initially, and Ambrose is just like, well, I probably just said I don't like you. So even if, like, you do have authority and stuff and whatever, you know, you're being a dick. And then going on from there, getting him kicked out, like, Ambrose is like, oh, I see you really, really want this. I'm going to use, like this situation and how you are right now and then fuck you over, like, permanently. I think that's the death knell. Like, that is, like...
Yeah, I mean, but... I don't know. Yeah, like, Ambrose is a creep, but I don't know. I think Foth instigates a lot of...
Well, Foth doesn't kind of back up, at least how it's described. He doesn't...
But because the exchange they have would remind me, like, so I'm placing it in from my background or experience or perspective or whatever. It's like, okay, say you're a graduate assistant, right? Ambrose being the graduate assistant fella who is not his rank. Yo, and there's three ranks in the school, Elir, Rilar, and Elfie. I think of Elir as, like, undergraduates. Rilar as graduate students. And then Elfie as doctoral students.
Yeah.
Right? Like, that's pretty much how they translate.
Yeah.
Right? So Ambrose would be a graduate student and fella would be an undergraduate. So it's a student assistant, right? And someone is asking for information about whatever, right? That would be like a graduate assistant stepping in, overriding what a student assistant's saying and going, you can't do this because X, right? Like, they have more authority in that position. Like, he's, even if he's doing it out of spite, there's still a reason why he's doing it, I guess. Like, I, on the one hand, like I said, I'm pretty sure that Ambrose is not as much of an asshole as he's portrayed. And on the other hand, he's a stone cold asshole.
Yeah.
It's just the ways that he's portrayed being an asshole are just cartoonish and over the top. And would stop if Gvoth stopped responding. You know? Because Kvoth is equally vicious in other parts of the story to other characters. Like, well, and actually one of the lines that I thought was really cool is when he's messing with those bullies, right? In Tarbeen. And he lights one of them on fire.
Oh, yeah. That's great.
And said that he did it with the cold, pure hatred of a child. I thought that was a really cool line, personally. So, like, Kvoth is not a really great protagonist.
Yeah.
Like, he does dickish things.
Yeah.
Not to stay on Kvoth, because I know we were trying to get away from him. Okay, so, Ambrose, yay or nay?
For what?
Do you like him as a character?
Yeah, I think he functions well as an antagonist. I mean, if you're going to set someone, if you're going to set someone up as being, like, a big... You know, big dick, Mr. Big Dick, swinging it around, which is Kvoth. You need someone who's, like, a big asshole.
Yeah.
You also...
I love the sexual imagery that you just unwittingly set up.
Yeah, and you need someone who's just going to be, like, just kind of be powerful in a different, like, aspect. Because I imagine if, in my mind, if Ambrose is able to set up these different, like, connections and do these different things and also has it, because he obviously has influence with Hom and the other master.
Brandur.
Yeah, so he obviously has influence there.
Yeah.
Then his parental line, like who he's,
yeah,
who he comes
he's,
from.
He's like third in line to be king of some gigantically rich region.
So he's like, got a lot of power, and the only reason that gets subjugated is the fact that there is some authority outside of him in this university. But outside, when he's out, he's like, when it's outside of that spear, he's like, I can bring the hammer down hard. Like, I can I can try to hire someone to kill you. Which I don't know if it's still explicitly clear whether Ambrose had a hand in that.
I really don't think he did. Like, that seems like a bit too far. Especially as much of an asshole as he is, like that seems a bit too far.
Mm-hmm.
Because all it would take is for those guys to go, yeah, this guy paid me to do it.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
isn't it like he's yelling at them at the end, and then like there's kind of like writerly, you know, creative leeway as to why like he's got to go, like he leaves, so he's not able to like interrogate him.
Yeah,
there's something related to that.
I mean, the feeling I got is that they were trying to mug him.
That's not really the case, though. Like,
no, like it gets out of hand.
No, the thing is, though, like with the divining rod that they had, which is basically that would have been
would have been locked onto him. Yeah.
Yeah, and it was locked on him, so it was definitely a hit. It would. How else? Would you write that out? Like, it's a hit. Like, they literally have a piece of his, like his stuff. I forget if it's his hair or his clothing or something like that.
Yeah,
they have a piece of his stuff, and they hunt him down specifically.
Yeah, I mean it's. Yes, Ambrose is set up as the person who has done that.
Even if it's not Ambrose, someone was specifically trying to hit him.
Okay, yeah, fair enough.
Because it's too random, there's too much effort into it.
But he's the only person who's set up as that. Like, how many other people has Kvothe pissed off?
Exactly, so it would have been insinuated that it would have been Ambrose. I'm just saying that even if you don't believe it's Ambrose, which I think, in my own mind, it's kind of like...
I think it not being Ambrose would have made it a better story. Like, if it was just some random other person that he stepped on, that he was just like, oh, I didn't even notice this person.
Yeah.
It would have underscored that he's an asshole and he doesn't notice other people.
Well, I don't know if it's if that's revealed, like, who, if anyone set it up in the second book, so I don't know if you're working with that knowledge.
Oh, no.
Okay, then it's insinuated that it's Ambrose, but it's not. It's obviously not a clear enough connection that they can, like, go... You know, he can have him arrested or some shit.
No, and that being said, like, I'm pretty sure, like, reading the book, like, just this book, oh, yeah, no, it's totally Ambrose, because there's no one else he's set up to be that antagonistic with.
Yeah. So, yeah, it was definitely a hit on him. Now, whether you want to say it happened or not, that's a whole different thing. But if we're going to take it at face value, then it was a hit.
Yeah, like, and I think we have to take everything at face value. Like, I can't really insert things in my head where I'm like, oh, it would have been better if you did this. Because, as you know, like, I have a unique appreciation for different types of media.
Yeah, you could go, like, One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest. It all happened in his head, you know, and just do stuff like that. And it's like, I mean, you can go that way, but we're just going to take the book.
No, but we'll take it at face value that this actually happened.
Yeah.
I'm not convinced that any of it actually happened the way that it's being presented.
Which I think is a really interesting viewpoint, and I think is especially valid the way that the narrative is set up.
Yeah, because, I mean, there is, you know, omniscient description, narration, whatever, like with the Chronicler in Bast.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's stuff that you can take as absolutely being true, you know, objective storytelling.
Yeah.
But because all of this is an oral history that the Chronicler is taking down, there's a lot of stuff. Anything that's in the first person is, in my head, suspect, and I need to assess whether or not that's actually the case. So in that respect, the framing device is very good for this novel.
Well, I think what's also interesting, and to kind of hammer that home, is that I don't know if he would actually come out with it and say it, or if it's something he's mentioned, but it's something that, you know, I've heard a bit recently, listening to authors talk and stuff and whatnot, and that there really is no reliable narrator. like every narrator is coming from a particular perspective and viewpoint, and the investment that you have in what you're doing from a character standpoint really influences how you're setting up the story and who you're setting up. I mean, because it's from Kavoth, so he is the protagonist, and he could be unreliable, but to take another look at it, like, in our own positions, in our own lives, you know, telling our own stories and narrating things, like, we're doing the exact same thing.
Like, yeah, like, everyone's like a hero in their own story.
Yeah. Well, not only just that, but the way things are set up, like, how big a villain Ambrose is, like, what kind of struggle that this was, like, your motivations for doing these things, they're all very biased, and it's kind of impossible to get away from that. You can be a little more judicious in your perspective if you're trying to just like chronicle something like detail wise. Be like, yeah, that guy went over there. He did this. They exchanged some words. There was a little bit of terseness. One of them said this. The other one said this. It got kind of heated.
Well, and I mean, that even comes up with the chronicler, because like, I forget where it is. But Kavoth even stops the story, and it goes back to third person. Third person, right? It goes back to the trustworthy source of narration.
Yeah, it goes to the omniscient.
The omniscient narrator. And he's like, he's asking him, oh, do you not believe that this happened or whatever? And he's just like, I'm not making any comments. I'm just taking down your story. Because like, he's copying it down in shorthand, which... By the way, I really like the insertion of shorthand. And it does seem that Coat, at least, the alias that Kavoth is under, is extremely intelligent. Like, he picks up the shorthand that he's using after watching him, and he's just, like, giving him random words. And even makes up a few to see how he handles made-up words. I really like that insertion. Going back to story building, just to sidestep. Because, what were we talking about? Shit. I got sidetracked because I was...
Talking about reliable narrators and stuff
reliable
like that.
Reliable narration. Like the chronicler even comments on, like, I'm just taking down your story. I'm not really judging, which... To me, indicated that even the chronicler is not buying his bullshit. He's taking down the story.
To me, the chronicler, when he talks about getting the story, like, he's like, I just want you to tell me, like...
From your perspective.
From your perspective.
Yeah.
And I don't want you to, like, hold back anything. Just tell me exactly from what you have there. And the chronicler also has a reverence for the word.
Yeah.
Like, the word that he puts down. So, like... Once he puts it down, like, that's the word.
Yeah.
Because that's what you said.
Sure.
So that's what's in there. So the chronicler does have a couple moments where he's like, wow, it's kind of odd to, like, see this guy as, like, an innkeeper. But then he does have a couple perspective moments where he's like, oh, well, yeah, he is kind of just an innkeeper, but I just saw him do, like, some crazy fucking shit. And like the way,
those
like
little demon beetle things.
And the way like he carried himself, it's like, wow, there's something underlying underneath, you know, this person that I'm looking at now. So, I think he is used to, like he does as a narrative device, like to cast out, but he also, like, he shoots it like in the hoop. Like he's like, oh yeah, this is exactly what that is. So
sure. And you know, I'm sorry, I'm going to go back and restate my point that I think all this is bullshit. So I don't know if you noticed anyone that Kavoth does not like is just this painted as this horrible, horrible monster. Anyone who's kind of neutral doesn't get a whole lot of story exposure. Like, I'll reference someone who supposedly is a friend of his, Manet, or Manet. In my head, he's like an undergraduate student who's on campus, who lives on campus and is like in his mid-30s. Like, he's just been there forever.
Yeah, he's great. He's so good.
He's awesome. I love when he's giving him the alternate narration for when his like work-study guy is talking about the new dangerous chemicals. He's just like, yeah, what that guy just said translates to big goddamn explosion.
Yeah, yeah, he's pretty great.
He's honestly probably one of my more favorite characters, and I kind of want to get more of his story. Like, I think that's hilarious because the financial burden goes up the higher the rank you are. He's still learning all of this really advanced stuff, and he's obviously very skillful.
Yeah.
And he's being very smart of like, well, if I can get away with only paying 2 talents a year, that's great. You guys feel free to pay like 10 times that to study here.
Yeah.
I'm still learning all this stuff.
Yeah. So he's definitely an interesting character.
Yeah. But on the flip side of that, Master Hemi, the professor that just immediately does not like him. Well, I mean, with kind of with good reason. The way he's introduced to us, which I have as page 273, what the fuck, is a male student shows up late. And he kind of lets it slide, but he's kind of snarky. A female student shows up late, and he, like, acts all sweet to her. And he's like, could you please close your legs? And she crosses her legs, and he goes, now that the gates of hell are closed, we can continue. Like, what the fuck? Like, who does that? Like, I've worked around some really, really mean faculty members, and, like, that is out of hand and ridiculous that someone would say that.
It is kind of odd how they have it set up, because the it's kind of like the teacher staff that they have there or the administration at the same time.
Yeah.
So there's an extreme concentration of power there.
Oh, yeah.
Because they make all these choices. Stuff that, you know, the professors wouldn't make, like, have the final say-so in the expulsion of a student or to, like, give a bunch of lashes.
Yeah, well, no, I mean, like, historically, that's what a university would have been in. Way back. Like, Harvard would have been set up to deal with, like, in the 1600s, would have been set up to deal with people who were around Kvothe's age. Like, it would have been more like a high school, a religious high school, than Harvard University. You know, like, it's so... I mean, historically, that's kind of accurate.
I mean, but just the amount of power that they have is kind of... I mean, because...
Oh, yeah, no, it's
within,
ridiculous.
Within this world, because they have abilities and they can do things...
Yeah.
And they can institute lashes, and, you know, the only thing I don't see is, like, any kind of medieval torture kind of stuff, other than the lashing, which is kind of shitty.
Yeah,
but even
but
then,
like,
they kind of cut back with that. They're like, yeah, you can wear your shirt if you want.
Yeah, know? Like, you don't have to. He's like, no, I want people to see me not bleed.
Yeah.
Again, to bolster his story of Kvothe, what is it, Kvothe the Bloodless? Yeah. Which, I mean, that's actually kind of cool.
Yeah. I think, too, part of the setup of the character, possibly if you want to go back and maybe get a better understanding of why Kvothe is the way he is, you can think about someone being raised as, like in the city, like as just like an urchin.
Yeah.
And just like having to survive that.
Sure.
And like the PTSD from having to listen to like a young boy being raped, which is that one scene that happens.
That one scene is terrifying.
It's
like
dark.
I made a note of it and I was like, holy shit.
And and the guilt that he goes back on with that, cause he's like, you know, I could have done something, but then it would have revealed my hiding place and everything that I have.
Yeah.
And they would have probably beat the shit out of me too. And who
and
knows what else.
And also raped him.
Yeah. But see, the thing is though, he talks about that too. Like how, like he'd gotten caught. So that probably happened
to him
too.
Yeah, no, that's happened
to him.
Yeah. Like it's very, like he doesn't out and out say that, like go into, yeah, being held down and all the graphic details.
Yeah, butt raped by like a bunch of young and older boys.
But I mean, yeah, like based on his narration, that's reading between the lines. That's probably what happened to him.
Yeah. So you can kind of think of someone who doesn't really have a lot of social graces.
Yeah.
You know, just kind of fractured.
But he does. He's the most awesome at everything. I'm sorry, we keep getting back into how much of a shitty protagonist he is.
Well, I mean, I don't think he's shitty. I think the way he's set up is not as interesting, but within the enclosed system of the book itself, like there are logistical ties on why certain things are set up different ways. Now, the validity of those ties, you can call into question. And that's just, for me, that has to do with just like writing. Like being a writer,
yeah,
you know, and structuring a character a certain way,
sure,
and making them believable. And with me, I've always had like, I guess, an issue because I'm like, I'm sitting down with a book and I'm gonna grab a book now, and opening the book up. This is fiction, and then as soon as I open up, I start reading make believe.
Yeah.
So I'm like, oh, let me start critiquing this make-believe. Wait, what am I doing again?
Yeah.
Like, no. No, you're basically sitting down and fantasizing.
Yeah.
You're having an acid trip in your head without, you know, any assistance.
Yeah.
So writerly, I think there's a lot to critique in there. So
yeah, well, and you know, he's a very good writer. Rothfuss, I mean. Like, there's a... Where is it? Oh, let me grab the book. Children?
I touched the book. Now he needs to touch it.
So
he's that kind of person.
Here's the bit where he's explaining life on the road,
mm-hmm,
with his family,
mm-hmm,
how he would disappear because he knew his parents needed like quote unquote alone time.
Mm-hmm.
He would just disappear in the woods, and if it took him longer to get back and them longer to make dinner, like whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's the reality of living on the road in close quarters with other people.
Yeah.
Where is it? It's the bit that I hope they spent those last few hours well. I hope they didn't waste them on mindless tasks, kindling the evening fire and cutting vegetables for dinner. I hope they sang together as they so often did. I hope they retired to our wagon and spent time in each other's arms. I hope they lay near each other afterward and spoke softly of small things. I hope they were together, busy with loving each other until the end came. It's a small hope and pointless, really. They are just as dead either way. Still, I hope. I really like that piece of writing.
Mm-hmm.
Like, knowing the outcome,
mm-hmm,
of what's going to happen and retroactively, you know, hoping for the best for people you care about.
Yeah, like, it's a realistic perspective.
It's a realistic perspective, mm-hmm, from this otherwise unbelievable character.
Mm-hmm. Which I think is meant to like be an anchor for the rest of the kind of narrative.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah,
the rape scene, you know, the urchiness, like the, you know, the grit of his life, you know, the shittiness of some circumstances, like how it gets set up in. And then that's supposed to, I think, kind of balance it. It's kind of hard, because I think this is a... It's not necessarily a recent development in writing, but it's something that I think is emphasized a bit more now, to have a character that has flaws and have a character that's set up, you know, as a flawed person, but still able to like highlight the strengths that they have, you know, as far as like making the, and especially within the fantasy genre, like,
yeah,
you know, you're not gonna, you could, I guess, write a book from the perspective of Chronicler, but then you'd have like him writing this, and then you'd have weeks of him just traveling on a wagon.
Yeah.
You know, just like doing shit.
Okay, I'm going to interject, mm-hmm, real quick.
Mm-hmm.
The bit with the Chronicler that I liked was him getting mugged on the highway.
That was great.
By those deserted soldiers.
And they were so polite.
They were so polite. Like, he, mm-hmm, even comments, he's just like, this is the most polite mugging I've ever had.
Mm-hmm.
The bit that I really thought was funny, though, is because he has all this money stashed all over him, he's just like, whatever,
mm-hmm,
is he convinces the guy who responds literally with like, you've got a big pair on you. Like, he uses that language,
yeah,
of... You got some brass ones swinging down there. I'll give you some, leave you some money so that you can buy room in the next town. Sure.
Mm-hmm.
And his response, just to show how gracious he can be as well, he goes, yeah, that thing your guy took, that he thought was alcohol is actually, wood polish. So, mm-hmm, if he drinks that, he's going to fucking die.
Mm-hmm.
Don't drink that. And so he's like, okay, cool. We're cool. We understand our roles in this exchange.
It's pretty great.
There is no harm intended now.
Yeah, it's pretty great. What is that? It's almost like a British humor segment there.
Yeah.
That would be a great little skit.
Yeah, a little like Monty Python or Dead... what is it? It's not Dead Gentleman. Maybe it is Dead Gentleman. Anyway, a British show.
Yeah, a little Monty Python sketch. Exactly.
Yeah. Honestly, I think... So, I'm torn between thinking that this is maybe intended for young adult readers. I think there's a little... There's more subtlety than I would expect a young adult novel to have in some of the things.
Yeah.
And also, I would think it's way too long to be considered a young adult novel. Because... This first volume, we're looking at 720 pages. Now, some kids, like I was reading, like I read it the first time, which is like well over 1,000, or not well over, slightly over 1,000 pages, I think in sixth or seventh grade, right? But Stephen King was not marketed to me as a reader at that time. I'm wondering if this was originally intended for young adult audiences, but the publisher marketed it a certain way. You know,
I couldn't see that as a YA book.
Really?
No, like not with rape, PTSD, and some of the other fucked up shit
brought
in there.
Up like once, and it's very... It's not as in my memory, at least, it's not as graphic.
It's not graphic, but it's for me, it's not the best. The strength of that passage isn't as graphic. It's its emotional weight.
Yeah,
like it's, and that's not something that you know. Right after I got done with you know, Lord of the Rings.
Yeah,
and I'm done reading that, and then I walk into this. It's not the same tone at all.
Like, yeah,
I would just be like, holy fuck. What the hell? They said it was a fantasy novel. I thought we were going to talk about, you know, Elevensies, you know, and have some dark stuff, you know, like the torture of Gollum and stuff, whatever. They talk about that briefly and how it was just like, you know, horrible.
Yeah.
They really like did wretched things.
Well, there's a different sense of propriety. I mean, because Lord of the Rings came out in what, the 50s, I think? Early 50s, whereas this came out in 07. So I'm making the
internet adjustments.
Internet adjustments.
I still don't feel like any publishing house in their right mind would market that to young adults.
Yeah, no, that's what I'm saying. Like that's why it's marketed for adults.
Yeah.
I'm wondering if Patrick Rothfuss, the writer, intended it to be a young adult novel, and the publishers market Daw. I don't know what else they published.
Yeah,
they have a fantasy imprint apparently.
I'm
wondering if Daw decided, no, we're gonna do this for adults. I'm wondering whose decision that was, but I mean that's neither here nor there, I guess. I did want to comment that the magic system in this, sympathy, is really interesting. Like having to know the name of something to call it and bend it to your will. I would also like to point out that was ripped entirely from Ursula K. Le Guin's Wizard of Earthsea novels, which are another young adult fantasy novel set.
How is it structured in there?
Pretty much the same thing. Like, you have to know the names of things to be able to use their magic.
But in what respect,
it's
though?
It's called sympathy. It's called knowing the name of whatever
of something
you're using. It's pretty much ripped from there. Like, in Earthsea, the wizard is... I haven't read it since I was in, like, elementary school. Like, that's the level of story. But like... I'm pretty sure he's going to a school to learn how to use sympathy. That's kind of the point of the story with some other things tacked on.
There's, I thought the interesting aspect of that was the kind of the chemical basis of things.
Yeah.
And now the knowledge of alchemy, but except how it's actually been evolved and translated into actual scientific principles.
Yeah.
Because there's a lot of that in there as far as...
Yeah, like, there's a lot of that in here as well. Mm-hmm. But I also see that Ursula K. Le Guin apparently thinks it's okay because she gave a blurb on the back.
Mm-hmm.
Who am I to say it's wrong of him to steal her thing if she is actually like, this is actually really good?
I mean, the name of stuff for me, just for my background, that has a lot of biblical elements to it. Like knowing the actual name of like an angel or like a demon or the devil, like those things have power and weight to them.
Yeah. Well, and
I think that's an old concept too.
Oh yeah, no, it is. Like, that's not specific, I don't think, to Le Guin. Like, I think she was the first to use it in like a fantasy novel.
Mm-hmm.
But I also know that she, for a time, I think, was a professor in a school for cultural anthropology. So like, she knew full well what she was creating.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
So, like, I see what you're saying.
Yeah, that's cool. I think, for me, one of the, it's a side issue because, you know, there's all that actual writing stuff you have to do. But figuring out a magic system for your fantasy novel is not something I envy for anyone. Because there's...
Well, it's really easy for assholes like us with microphones to tear it down and be like, that's bullshit.
I mean, because for me, the string thing that was in the Wheel of Time with, like, the knitting...
Oh, the... Yeah.
And stuff like that. That's cool. And, like, the... Also, it makes it so that magic has a very tactile kind of sense.
Yeah.
And at least for the first couple books that you're going through, there's still a lot of mystery about that.
Yeah.
Like, Rand would get into a situation, and he would, like, come to an understanding and start seeing, like, some of the strings that were connected. And also, like, he'd meet, like, someone who's obviously on a higher power level, like, who has knowledge, and he could see, like, oh, they're connected to, like, this other thing. This is how he's utilizing that as a form of strength. And, like, there's a couple scenes where he just, like, comes through and, like, cuts people from... There's strings, and then they're just like, holy fuck, you know, because they get really fucked up because they're kind of in the middle of doing things. So
isn't there a thing in Wheel of Time called Balefire? I can't remember.
Yeah, Balefire. Balefire burns you. Yes.
Well, they made a role-playing game of Wheel of Time.
Mm-hmm.
And I think Balefire in it, I haven't read past like the fourth Wheel of Time book, I'm sad to say. Balefire actually burns your thread backwards on the wheel.
Yeah, you can burn someone from the timeline.
From existence.
Yeah, from the timeline. And
that's pretty fucking awesome.
That is awesome. It has a lot of implications as far as like continuity.
Yeah.
And I think for me, the best part, even as you're going on in the books, which I went pretty far along, I think I still need to finish up the whole series. The strength of that work and that book was the sense of mystery. Because like they'd travel through like these little tears and they'd get into like this alternate area where things were just like gaps and there was missing. There still wasn't really complete like descriptions and understandings. Like there was still like a lot of air of mystery around the whole thing, at least as a reader initially going through it. And like, I'm sure there's like lore hounds who are like, oh, this is how this works. You get three strands of this, you add four strands of that, and you get peach cobbler pie.
Not to talk too much about other books is because I know a few people who are like super into Wheel of Time.
Mm-hmm.
It's funny to me that like, you know, J.R.R. Tolkien built his world and like dove head first into his own world and was just like, I'm going to get up my own asshole about all this stuff. Right. Robert Jordan, I mean, granted, he died before the series was finished, so I don't think he ever had a chance to do it, but it's interesting that the fan base are the ones who are just, like, making up all this other stuff on the side, like, weird fan fiction that, like,
you could do crazy
is written in the same style and could very well be a Wheel of Time book.
Yeah. A lot of weird stuff.
I don't really see that for this, though, because, like, like, the world-building elements in here are cool, but it's not... Like, Wheel of Time and Lord of the Rings are fairly grounded and defined in certain ways.
Mm-hmm.
So the like you as the reader know the limits of certain things.
Mm-hmm.
But I think because this is first person and Kvothe doesn't necessarily know the limits of things,
mm-hmm.
the background, the like world behind everything is kind of sketchy, and it's so it's cool to put your like headcanon onto it.
Yeah.
But there are like smaller elements that I like. How are we running?
We're 55.
55? Okay. So not too much longer. But like him what was it? It's the like little touches with world building, like the guy that works in acquisitions for the archives. He's mm-hmm. only in there for like a page or two,
mm-hmm.
but he has this exchange with one of his friends who works in the archive,
mm-hmm.
and you know he doesn't look like a quote unquote magic user. He looks like he's got a sword on his hilt, on his belt, and he's got this cape, and
mm-hmm.
he's like. Worldly, and he speaks these foreign languages to other people, and he's just like, oh, how's it going? Like, he seems like just like an adventurer, because yeah. that's what he does. He goes out into the world and he collects these books,
mm-hmm.
and it's like in my mind, the archives at the school, like, are, you know, archives, like they're it's books that were already there that might expand every now and then,
mm-hmm.
but it's a collection that's kind of deeded to the mm-hmm. school. Like it's static and it doesn't really change.
Mm-hmm.
But like that little touch with the element, it's like, oh, of course the university sends people out all over the world to gather knowledge. Like, mm-hmm. of course that's what they do.
Yeah.
So of course there would be people who work at the university that do that.
Yeah.
I want to know more about that guy. I want a little sidetrack with him and mm-hmm. see what he goes to get these books.
Yeah.
Like, that's a cool detail for me, mm-hmm. at least. Any other thoughts on world building?
Yeah, I'd say the limits are kind of interesting. There's like a scene where they talk about what's his face? The guy who ends up being in the original crew that kills like his family, like his mom and his dad. And he's like the one with the dark
Cinder? Kennel. Cinder or Haliax?
Haliax.
Okay.
And they talk about, like, they go back in time and talk about, like, his development and how he was a powerful, like, name speaker. And,
yeah.
And his exchange with that other guy where, like, he curses that other guy to not say something so he can't, like, do anything. And then the other guy does, like, a reverse curse in one respect. I thought that was cool. Because then when you go back like that, you get to see like, oh, well, this is like, there's a lot of like, there's a ceiling. There's a high ceiling for this level of power and ability. And there's a lot of stuff with Elladin too, that has that where he's obviously, there's a ceiling there. Like he knows stuff. It's just not being let through. So I thought it was interesting. The exchanges with his friends, as far as Kvothe, like at the university, like there's like a happy days element to it. It's like, oh shucks, you know, and that's cool. I mean, because that's part of friendship and stuff, whatever.
Yeah.
I just thought it was interesting, like how much time he spends like in Tarbin. It feels like story wise, and then he goes to the university. But it doesn't really read or have a lot of the arc of what you would expect out of a fantasy novel starting off with. I mean, at least if you're going to have like a popular one, like if we're talking about like Wheel of Time, the first book is just like, you get like a chapter or two, like set up, there's a boom, they're just out, they're doing shit. They got to travel, they meet stuff that they don't know about. They spend a night in like some creepy ass town that's been like taken over, you know, by this evil force. That force that is so evil and like destructive that even like the Midrals, I'm not sure how I pronounce them. Even when the Midrals go there, they get fucked over because they can't fuck with that shit. That stuff is just like evil incarnate.
Yeah.
And so it's like a running pace for the book. But this book feels like we go to one spot, it just kind of stops. And then we move a little bit, but it doesn't really have the same kind of pace that I would expect from like a fantasy
start
novel.
And start and stop and start and stop. Yeah. And part of that is also the framing device, too, where they cut back to him and he's just like, I got to take a break. I got to.
But I mean, how much of this book, like for me, like there's Tarbin, for me, narrative wise, Tarbin and his love affair with
Denna.
Denna are the biggest parts of this book.
Yeah.
And then, you know, you have some university stuff, but we didn't even get to explore the archives, obviously, because he didn't.
Yeah, because he didn't.
Because he didn't. And then you have the underneath area where he uses to access the archives.
Yeah.
That's cool, too. We don't get to explore much of that.
Nope.
You know? So, like, the cool mystical parts, like, we're just, like, really hungry for.
Yeah.
But we get a lot of, like, him swooning over this chick.
Yeah.
You know?
Which, on that note... The dragon in this
so
is
cool.
Probably the coolest thing
so
I've ever
cool.
seen. Like, they happen upon some, like, and I got to throw this into a game at some point that I read for you guys, where, like, there's all this stuff set up where he finally pieces together, why does this dude have a crossbow here? Oh, they're harvesting, like, basically heroin from the trees.
It's like tar heroin.
Yeah, it's tar heroin from the trees.
Yeah.
And, you know, like, he gets, like, a watermelon-sized thing of stuff, and this dragon comes along, and it's basically a cow that can breathe fire. Like, it's just this giant, like, thing in the woods, and it eats the thing, gets fucked up, and they kill the dragon. So that's the story of how he kills a dragon, is that he got it high and then murdered it. Which I kind of felt sorry for it, but that's another interesting little world building thing.
Yeah, he talks about, you know, feeling really sorry for it himself as a character, and he just felt bad for killing this thing like several times. But I think all those little, like, little detailed stuff, are the stuff that I think sometimes writers don't get a chance to focus on or don't put a lot of development time in, those little bits tend to be, I think, some of the strongest parts of his narrative. Like, whether it's, like, talking about the alchemical stuff, and building those little lights when he's talking about that.
Oh, yeah, the little, the like, thief lantern his professor is like...
I can't sell this shit.
I can't sell this. I can't in good conscience sell this. I'll pay you for it, but don't make this anymore.
Yeah.
I don't want to see this out there.
He's like, I'm going to smelt this down.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm going to pay you for it and smelt it down.
Yeah.
And, so those little details and stuff are cool. The, like, you're talking about the language thing, you know, the shorthand as well. So those little details are really cool. And I think really bolster up this book because they keep your interest in, like, in, you know, longer passages, like when he's going out and venturing with Denna, and that's fine. I mean, because if you've ever felt swoony over someone, you're like, okay, I understand where he's coming from with this.
Yeah. It's just, I think he focuses more than I would like to on, like, the like you were saying, that basically the boring aspects of his book, which is the majority of his story, I don't really like. I like the tiny little snippets of, like, well, I want to read about that. Now, like, because it's more interesting than the story he's telling in the pages. Like, it's just like, well... No, tell me about this dude that goes out and gets these books. Like, this would be more interesting. I don't care about Kvoth.
You know, and that's, I think with Robert Jordan, like, the book, to compare, like, just a narrative, like, the book moves so quickly and stuff doesn't really get, like, looked at a lot of times really closely just because there's just no time for that. They're trying to, like, fight off this whatever.
Sure.
You know, even when he goes out into the... into the desert with the Aeol, however you say that, the Aeol, and I know there's pronunciation things, but I haven't seen the book in a long time.
Yeah,
and
I pronounce it phonetically.
And then he gets like this that dragon tattoo.
Yeah,
you know, that's just kind of like out of nowhere. You know, it's like Pierce is like, that's cool. Like, how does that work? that's kind of odd. And then what's his face shows up with a copy of it, and it was like, wait. That's even cooler. Like, what kind of thread magic did you have to use to fake that shit? Because it looks the same. It looks exactly the same. You know? And so, you know, I guess it's kind of hard to kind of balance that pace to be like, to take a stop for a moment.
Yeah.
To, like, have time to, like, talk about something cool and detailed.
Yeah.
And then just be, like, swashbuckling through, you know, the story. So.
Yeah.
It's a good read. I don't know if we want to segue into reviews.
Yeah, we'll segue into reviews, I guess, and then do movie time, which shouldn't take long. But I would read it like at the beach where you're not having to like, you don't really want to process anything deep and heady. It's a good beach read. Maybe if you're an aspiring middle schooler, you might like it. Don't do anything that Kvothe does. Don't set people on fire or be Captain Nice Guy. No one likes Captain Nice Guy. Don't be Captain Nice Guy. You know, that's why I subtitled this book "The Adventures of Captain Nice Guy." It's like he spends most of his time being the friend zone dude. And
well, the whole time you can feel like Denna's like, dude, just make your move. She totally wants him to make his move, and I don't think he does.
Yeah,
for the most part.
So yeah, like that's my recommendation. Read it if you don't want to really be focusing on anything too much, too in depth.
Mm-hmm.
Because, like I said, I read it after only having read nonfiction and lit reviews and stuff like that for 2.5 years. So I don't think my brain had wired itself back to reading fiction critically anymore. So yeah, that's my review.
Yeah. I'd say it's an enjoyable read because I'm one of those, kind of people that's like, I don't know. If you're going to read fiction, you're obviously reading to enjoy it. And I did. I read through it. I enjoyed it. There's obviously some things to critique. But the parts that I enjoyed and that I liked were a good read.
Yeah.
So I'm not going to give a numerical score. But
I'd give it about a C. If we were going to do what... Have you ever read Kurt Vonnegut?
Mm-hmm.
Like, he gave himself grades on his books in relation to their other grades, which I think is hilarious. I would give it about a C.
Would
C minus maybe.
I would give it. There are a lot of great spots. It's a fun book. I enjoyed it. If you're interested in fantasy and you haven't read it before, I'd give it a read because there's a lot of interesting bits. And that's about it. That's pretty much it. I either enjoy something or I don't like it at all.
Oh, you're just binary? Like, you're not?
Yeah.
Okay,
I mean,
so that's a positive then.
That's a positive for me.
Okay.
Like, we're obviously sat here and critiqued it. I have an uneasy relationship with critique and analysis. Because I can obviously see the merit in doing it. Mm-hmm. So I can obviously see the merit in doing it, but it's, I don't know. I feel like you like something or you don't. And if you didn't, if there's things that weren't perfect, yeah, they're not perfect.
Yeah.
That's but fair. Did you like it? Did you enjoy it? Then yeah. Did you?
Yeah.
Was there like shittier ways to spend your time? Yes. And you instead chose this and you got some good stuff out of it.
Yeah. I mean, I've read it. This would have been my second time reading it. I have a horrible memory due to medication that I'm on and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
But so I reread a lot of books, especially books that I like. I don't think
that sounds like a gift and a curse.
Yeah, like I wouldn't reread this book. Like now that I've read it twice, and I have my handy dandy notes. I don't think that I would reread it. So I may like gift it to my brother or something. You can have it if you want. If you want to make Josh read it.
It's very seldom that I will reread something, honestly.
That you will?
Yeah, I don't reread a lot of stuff.
Yeah, my wife's like that.
I don't know why that is.
No.
Like, I think it would be better if I did. But it's like, I think it's that dopamine hit from the initial like introduction of something. I'm just chasing that. So I'm just chasing it on something new.
So your opinion of it goes down each time you...
Well, no, it's just that like familiarity
breeds
of
contempt.
Something. Well, it doesn't really breed contempt. It's just like, I know. So it's like, I'm not as surprised. It's kind of like if you were playing like a game and like trying to get all the trophies and like that.
Oh, I see what you're saying. Yeah, yeah.
That would, that familiarity, like basically I'm saying I just lose interest.
Yeah.
Like re-engaging with something.
Sure.
I don't know if your wife has the same issues with dopamine.
Yeah, maybe.
But, you know, that hit, trying to get that hit again, right. Like novelty. Like, I like throwing myself into new situations.
Okay.
And being uncomfortable.
Yeah.
Because it's like, oh, that's interesting. That's cool. I like that. Even if I'm uncomfortable, if it's interesting, I like that novelty of that. And that keeps me interested and engaged. Because I get, otherwise, I have a really bad attention span otherwise. But if something's really interesting, I'm like, I'm all into it.
Okay.
You know? So even if I liked this book a lot, to reread it again without some kind of new express purpose, like if I was trying to like do a literary analysis or like break up the chapters, see how the characters are constructed, if that was something new, like I was engaging in a different way for a different purpose, I could do that. But just to read something again for enjoyment.
Gotcha.
I was going through my memory trying to remember the last time I've done that. And I can't remember doing that ever, which is really odd.
Well, and I mean, don't get me wrong. I'm not saying that I completely have no memory of doing it. Mm-hmm. Like, that's not what I'm saying. Like, mm-hmm. I remember I've read it.
Yeah, yeah.
But sometimes I'll read things and go, oh, I don't remember that happened. Yeah, mm-hmm. That's cool. So I'm...
That's cool. I mean, that's good. I think I'm just so busy wanting to chase a fix of something.
Yeah.
Which is part of the, like, we were talking briefly about my gear houndness and my love of musical instruments and stuff like that. That's part of the fix is because I can keep on going down the rabbit hole and finding new things. Like, I need something that gives that because I'm wired incorrectly, basically. So.
Not incorrectly, just differently.
Just very differently. Yeah.
Well, yeah, let's talk about this book series, Media Future, for a second.
Mm-hmm.
Call it Movie Time.
Ah.
So, from 2013 to 2015, Fox had optioned the books for adaptation, but that option expired. Lionsgate now has it, and they have proposed a film, TV series, and video game.
I don't see the video game. But we'll go with it. Maybe with the second book.
Do you know who is in charge of adapting this stuff? I think this is really cool. And if it were me, I would be like, holy shit, this is awesome.
No, I don't know who's in charge.
The guy who wrote Hamilton, Lin-Manuel Miranda.
What?
Apparently really? He's a huge fan of this.
Wow. I could see that.
I could see a TV series of this, mm-hmm. a movie less so, because it's like if they adapted it for a trilogy, I think. Well, maybe a trilogy of movies would work because I think there's a lot of this you could cut out and still maintain the same story.
Yeah.
Because a lot of it is just repetition of like, and I was awesome.
You'd have a 50-minute that Komodo dragon thing. Like that would be a 50-minute like action scene because that's cool. You could start the movie up with the opposite one where basically like God's walking the earth. Remember that segment that's in the book?
Yeah, that story
where God's walking the earth and he just basically like chains up the analogous version of Satan.
Yeah.
Who's just like destroying people and stuff. And you could start the movie off that way. And then the big fire and the cross thing. And it'd be so gruesome, disgusting, and awesome. So yeah, there are so many gems. And that, I think... And, you know, to be fair to the book, there are so many great scenes in it that I think would just, that on their own, like, if you look at them, like, wow, that is a great little scene. Like, the way that's set up, where, like, God goes around to all the towns and cities and it's like, hey, you want to come to this side? Stay on that side. Yeah. And then he gives people a chance. He's like, make sure you don't want to stay over there. Listen, you want to come to this side.
Yeah.
And he really tries to give them a chance for it. So there's tons of great scenes in the book. And I think, in all fairness to Rothfuss, like, great job on that.
Yeah. Good world building. If I were to cast this movie, because that's what we're, I think, going to do with these segments, if that works. is play producer and do the evil, slimy Hollywood thing and go, I love this property. I'm going to adapt it and fucking ruin it.
Mm-hmm.
So, for Kvoth, who do you think would be an ideal cast? I can go first.
Yeah, we talked about this briefly in that I'm not good with the names.
Okay, well, I can run down mine, and you can say I agree or, nah, I think this guy.
Really, I think I'd probably have more to contribute in... That could be definitely your forte because you're better with the structuring of the cast and knowing the people. I could have input as far as how I would structure the film or a series.
Okay, sure. So for Kvoth, I was thinking Evan Peters. He's the he played Quicksilver in the Fox version of the X-Men movies. In Days of Future Past and in Apocalypse, he's Quicksilver. He's also in American Horror Story.
Yeah.
A lot in different...
So him for Kvoth...
Yeah, because he can. He can have like a quiet intensity. That can kind of play older and younger.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, there's at least a decade or two between these characters. I think that Evan Peters, and I would also cast a little bit older, but just because I don't know child actors, and so I have no business going, yeah, this 16 year old here could play this 16 year old. Because I don't know 16 year old actors. Mm-hmm. So I don't
know.
I don't really watch that age range of media.
That's all he watches. It's creepy.
For Bast, I was thinking RJ Seiler. He played Billy, the blue Power Ranger in Power Rangers movie.
The last one?
Yeah, the one that just came out like in April, March.
Yeah. You already have a bastardized cast.
Why?
No, I'm just saying you have a cast like that has just been like... Like, you've searched the world, and you've these people together.
Yeah, like, that's what I do. When I read books, I swear, if I had a shit ton of money, I would love to be a producer, because that's what it seems like it takes, is you having a shit ton of money.
Oh, yeah.
When I read things, like, I try to picture characters in my head and play it out like a movie. For whatever reason, I have a better memory of it that way.
Yeah, Evan Peters would be, just to go back for a second, would be a lot of fun. I like him.
Yeah.
In that first season of American Horror Story, I like him.
Yeah.
Second season, I still like him. I don't like some of the other characters. They're kind of... I never finished the second season of American Horror Story, I think, because...
Oh, this show is so good. I love anthology shows.
Yeah. I really enjoyed it the first half of the second season. Then the narrative started taking some odd... Well, it for me, the pacing... got a little odd, and it just started focusing on characters I wasn't that interested in. So I do need to finish it. But he's great. He's a lot of fun.
Okay. Cool. So what about Billy as Bast?
I mean, I have my experience of him from Power Rangers, so to draw from.
Did you not like that?
No. I mean, what else has he been in?
I don't know. I don't
exactly.
have an IMDb in front of me. So, that's just what I was like, that guy. Let me get him. And so I looked up Power Rangers, and I was like, RJ Seiler. Got it.
I mean, the most I remember from the Power Rangers movie is...
Krispy Kreme?
Power Rangers. I mean, so I don't really remember much from performance, other than I thought everybody did much better in their roles than they had any reason to.
Yeah. For Chronicler, stay with me. I was thinking Mickey Rourke. Because, hear me out. Chronicler is a guy, he walks around on the road, like, him getting held up by highwaymen, like, it ain't no thing. Like, it happens to him all the time in the book. He's been through some shit. He even comments how, yeah, it was great. They didn't, like, break any bones or anything. Mm-hmm. It was awesome. He's probably been held up and, like, stabbed and beaten and left for dead. Like, I think you need someone like Mickey Rourke, who's just this big, giant guy who looks like he's been beaten into hamburger before. Because
I think
he has.
I think unwittingly, you're going to create a cast that is composed much like a Tarantino film, where like each person is like a shining star.
Yeah.
And like when they're on the screen, for some Tarantino movies, for me, it feels like whenever a character is on a screen, that whole movie is about them.
Well,
like at that moment. And then, like, the trick is moving from each one to another and weaving a narrative.
Well, see, I said I wanted to be a producer, not a casting director. Yeah. So this is going to be people that you recognize, because I don't I don't know up and coming. I don't live in LA, so I have no reason to know.
No, that's fine. What I mean by that is that like it'll play out like the Super Friends or like the Avengers, and that each person is like takes up the screen when they get on there. Maybe not so much Bast. I don't know.
Yeah.
But each person, like, can you imagine Evan Peters and
Mickey Rourke?
Mickey Rourke. As soon as the camera's on Mickey Rourke, the whole movie's about him in that moment. Just because he has a lot of screen presence. Yeah.
Screen presence, yeah.
So.
You'll love some of my later picks.
Yeah.
So, Denna, Alexandra Daddario.
Okay. Who's that again?
She was in the Baywatch movie. She's got the really piercing blue eye. She's
Yeah.
She's conventionally attractive.
I saw her in some of True Detective. Yeah, she's cool.
She's a decent actress from what I've seen.
She was again True Detective, better than what she needed to be in Baywatch.
Yeah. For Devi, Emma Watson.
Who's
that? She's the loan shark that he goes to.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I could see Emma Watson doing a really good characterization of Devi, because Devi is all like not the person that he was expecting to be this like loan shark.
Yeah. Devi's cool. I think Emma Watson probably have fun with Devi, in that Devi's kind of seedy.
Yeah.
Like there's a seedy character to her.
She's very flirty without anything really to back it up.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think if he jumped in, like it'd be down to clown. Like, she would totally be down to clown.
Yeah.
I think he's just kind of an idiot. But like taking people's blood and like holding that for as ransom with the stuff that you could do with it.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's kind of seedy.
Okay. Let's see, Fella, I was thinking Eve Hewson, which, side note, she's actually Bono of U2's daughter, which I did not know until I looked her up, because my wife and I watched this movie called This Must Be the Place, which is about a goth rocker hunting down a Nazi.
Mm-hmm.
It's got Sean Penn in it, and Eve Hewson plays a character called Mary in that movie, and I was like, I really like her. She can play like a meek, mousy character.
Mm-hmm.
Which is what I associate with Fella for some reason.
So who's Eve Hewson?
Eve Hewson?
What has she been in?
This Must Be the Place and The Nick.
Okay.
Which was a show on Stars or something that I've never seen, but my wife really liked. Let's see. Willem, Jaden Smith. I'm finger gunning you.
Yes. For sure. I think he should be Ambrose. Because that wouldn't make any sense. That's why.
Yeah, no, that wouldn't make no sense.
Exactly. Why you should do it. It'd be so great. So Fella, just to kind of interject a little bit, Fella, for me, like as I was reading the book, is like the most attractive woman ever, like in the history of time. Is that, we're talking about the same character, right?
No, Fella's the one that's the student that Ambrose is hitting on.
Yeah.
Being all creepy.
Yeah. So for me, like, in my head, my conception of her, like, she's super attractive.
See,
she talks about that she is really pretty. Like, it's talked about in the book. Like, she's really attractive.
Yeah, like, Eve Hewson is attractive, too. But, I mean, she looks young, I think, and so she would play younger.
I feel like Fella's supposed to be, like, super buxom, just, like, hourglass.
Okay.
Amazing. Because then he talks about when he visits her and her, like...
Oh, yeah, and he didn't notice that she was, like, naked and, like, what would you like? Yeah.
Well, he did notice that she was naked. And he
after
was just like,
he left, yeah.
Yeah. He's like, man.
He's an idiot.
Yeah. He's like, you want to come in? He's like, no, I got to go.
Which I don't believe. He's what, 16, and he didn't notice that? Come on.
Yeah.
Anyway.
I mean, he's got a boner about the library. Like, that's his real love right now.
That's true.
His library boner. Mm-hmm.
Let's see. Elodin? I'm thinking either a Ryan Gosling character or a Cillian Murphy. Because Elodin is not supposed to be as old as the other Masters. He's the youngest one, and he's like the same age as Manette.
Every time I see Ryan Gosling something, I'm always I was just kind of impressed, really.
Yeah, I think you could stick a wig and like a fake nose on him or something, and he would just be...
Don't mess with that face. What are you talking about putting a nose on that? That man is beautiful as is. Don't put a fake nose on that.
Oh, right. Oh man, I want to see how much I can piss you off with some of these castings. Yeah. So Kilden, I have either Idris Elba or Ernie Hudson. Someone who's an older guy, kind of weathered and experienced.
So who's Kilden again? Which one of the...
Kilden is the master that buys the hand lamp from him. He's the...
Oh, yeah.
Let's...
God, way to stick Idris Elba, like, in the background.
What?
Yeah.
No, he's an important character.
Sort of.
No, he's...
Maybe in the second book.
I would argue he's a pretty important character.
I mean, he has a lot of interaction with him, but...
Okay, well, then Ernie Hudson.
Yeah.
Give him some work.
I just, when we watched that kaiju robot movie, what was that called again?
Oh, Pacific Rim?
Yeah. I was like, why isn't this whole movie just about Idris Elba? Like, everybody else is kind of okay. Idris Elba's amazing.
Yeah, the major is awesome.
Yeah.
So for Lauren, the guy in charge of the archives, Ben Stein. Hey?
Master Lauren?
Yeah.
I could see that. Being an asshole. This is the weirdest casting composition I could imagine. Like, they're the agents.
That's the point.
The agents, like, having conversations between each other.
This thing would be financially untenable. Like, we're talking about, like, a $500 million movie just to get all these people on the same screen.
Like, even then, like, disregarding the money... Like, the conversations between Idris Elba's agent and Ben Stein's agent are just amazing. Because they're like, Ben Stein's like, okay, so what kind of movie is this, really? It's like, you say you have Idris Elba written down for this film? Okay, who else is it? Ryan Gosling? And Mickey Rourke? So I don't think this is impossible. I just, like, the setup in my head of this happening in the real world is just amazing.
Yeah. Okay, all right, yeah, envision this cast. For Master Hemi, I got Kelsey Grammer.
Wow. Yeah.
Yeah. For Master Brandur, I got Christopher Walken.
What does Brandur do again?
He's basically Hemi's lapdog. Or you could reverse them depending on who has better screen presence as a just raging asshole. I think Kelsey Grammer makes a better
Kelsey Grammer does make a better asshole.
And, you know, you've got Christopher Walken, like, in the background equivocating, like...
This is either going to have to be, like, a three-hour-long movie or, like, the greatest injustice is going to occur to Christopher Walken when he gets 5 minutes of screen time total.
Yeah, no, he would get, like, no screen time. He could shoot all of his scenes in, like, half a day.
Wow.
Tops. For Ambrose, I got Donald Glover.
Donald Glover.
Atlanta.
Yeah.
I
know. I'm just thinking about him in the role.
Childish Gambino. Get him in Ambrose.
Yeah, he definitely has an ability to have an edge on him when he wants.
Oh, yeah, no. Have you seen Community? He is an asshole in that show.
He's a fun asshole, but yeah.
But he's fun. Like, he seems like a likable guy, like you would expect, but he also seems like he could have a mean streak.
I feel like for some reason, watching actors, like, you have to... it almost seems like you have to be, like, a really likable dude to play an asshole.
Yeah.
It's almost like if I was... being nice to you, right? To be really, really mean to you, like, I'd have to almost, it would just be like switching a polarity switch, and I would just do the opposite of what I'd normally do in interactions. Because I know how to be polite. I know how to be like, but just switching that, and you can just be a real dick. So, yeah, it's great.
Let's see. For Mala, the, medical student.
Yeah.
I have Gillian Jacobs.
Okay.
She's in that Netflix show Love. She was on Community as well.
Yeah. Super cute.
Let's see. For Ori, I have...
I'd probably switch her with Ori. Gillian Jacobs is Ori.
I had her as Ori first, but I switched it because we did a rewatch of Harry Potter, and I don't want to typecast her, but she does it so well, is Ivana Lynch. She played Luna Lovegood.
Okay.
As Ori.
Okay.
Yeah?
Yeah. I still want to see Gillian Jacobs, though.
Yeah.
Because I think she'd have a lot of fun with that.
Crazy well.
She doesn't, but she, like, when
she
I've seen
her. She plays unstable, but she doesn't play, like, crazy and wounded, I don't think.
I feel like she'd have a lot of fun with that, though. I don't know. I'd like to see it.
Yeah.
Because yeah. It's just because I've already seen Luna Lovegood.
Yeah, that's true.
You know.
For Sim, I have, or Simmons, I have Joseph Gordon-Levitt.
Okay. Which one's Simmons again?
I'm bad with he's names. Like his friend that's like
oh, okay.
a soft pushover.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
They don't do a whole lot with him.
Yeah.
For Menet, I have Chris O'Dowd.
Okay.
He is, God, what is his name? He's not the guy with the weird hair on the IT Crowd.
Mm-hmm.
He's in Bridesmaids. He's the Welsh cop.
I've never seen Bridesmaids.
Oh, okay. Yeah, he's not in a whole lot of stuff, but he's Welsh and he plays older than he looks.
Did he play the Canadian in IT, the IT show you're talking about? Is that the one on FX? Is that the show you're talking about?
Not the American, the original version. It's on Netflix.
Okay.
But it was a BBC show.
Okay.
Yeah. Let's see. I have Sam Elliott for Kvothe's dad. I think his name was Arlidon. Arlen?
Yeah, something like that.
Mm-hmm. And Julianne Moore for his mom.
Okay.
You're just nodding your head.
Yeah.
Just reading down the list.
Yeah.
Benedict Cumberbatch for Lord Halifax and Vinnie Jones for Cinder. Because I imagine Cinder is like just this big, like, mook, like, which.
I'm trying to think like Lord Halifax, though. Like, I'm trying to.
I
feel like that's
him
a
being,
big role.
Being hissy and threatening and malevolent.
Well, like, watching him in that exchange, like, that goes back in time.
Yeah.
Like, he's very authoritative. And he's like a person that has, like, been on the top and, like, fell really hard.
Sure.
And he suffers from, knowing what the right thing is to do and then just doing the opposite of that because you're just like, fuck you now. You know, I lost my love. Fuck you now. And I feel like Benedict Cumberbatch might be it's too safe a choice.
Too safe?
I think it's too safe.
Okay. Who would you?
I don't know. I'm trying to think. I'm trying to think like. We don't want to stick in there. Not that he couldn't do it,
because he's
great. I enjoyed him in like the part where he wasn't saving anyone in the Star Trek movie where he played
where he played Khan.
Yeah, that was kind of fun. Yeah,
John Smith.
Yeah, and that was kind of fun. I don't know.
And the last one that I had was Alan Cumming as Count Threppy. He's the guy when he gets his talent pipes.
Mm-hmm.
The guy who is a patron but tells him, "Oh no, I got scared off by Ambrose."
Yeah, yeah.
I can't have any more.
Well, I thought he would just had already been committed.
Yeah, yeah. Like he already is a patron of other people.
Yeah, so he's just like
so he's
tapped
overextended,
out.
Yeah. But he's the one that tells him, I think, that Ambrose.
Oh,
is going
yeah, yeah, yeah. I think Ambrose is like dirtied people. Everybody for
yeah.
you. Yeah,
yeah,
yeah. That's
so, yeah,
cool.
That's my movie cast.
There you go. Wow.
Most expensive movie ever. Like that would never get made.
$350 million.
Mr.
Just for casting.
Yeah, Mr. Miranda. I hope you do a better job than I did casting your movie, your show, or what have you.
Mm-hmm. Good luck with that. I feel like though, with his experience with Hamilton, and I've heard the musical like a lot. Like I've heard it a lot. Hannah's maybe we've listened to that a lot.
Yeah.
And so I feel like his framing of a flawed character. That still has strengths, and who does make dumb choices, is he obviously understands how to weave that narrative really well.
Yeah,
because you come across at the end of the musical with Hamilton, you're like, yeah, Hamilton isn't he was definitely really flawed.
Yeah.
But he did like a lot of good work. But you don't come from it with rose tinted glasses at all.
Yeah.
Like at all.
No.
So and I think you could. I don't even want to think about trying to do like a musical about Thomas Jefferson, and had like his like little rape rooms or whatever you would call them.
Yeah.
No, please don't.
Rocking back and forth and muttering to himself about how he's a genius.
Yeah, and
I'm a genius.
His first his first foray into getting his 14-year-old like slave worker. Yeah, no, I don't want to. Yeah. I don't want to hear that musical. So
yeah, but yeah, with the movie being done, let's talk about the video game just a second. I want to insert here. I don't know how the fuck they're going to make a video game out of this.
I don't know either.
Because I don't want it to go on too long. But I'm thinking if they adapt it as a video game, like the character's either going to start off and just be unstoppable. And it's just like, well, this game is no fun. Or it can be like a PS1, like, oh, you're going through and here's this puzzle for playing the lute and singing at the same time. Here's this dragon fight. Got to solve this. Like PS1 level, but like a mobile game.
I don't understand video game with that. I didn't understand video game when they tried to do the Wheel of Time as a video game. And they did. Like, there was a video game, yes.
Was it a computer game or a console game?
Yeah, I think it was on the console. It might have been on PC. Okay. I think it might have been like on PC and then on console.
I remember the tabletop game.
Yeah, there was definitely a video game for it, and there was a lot of talk about it, and I think I saw footage of it. I'll have to look back and check it out.
Okay.
Because I got excited, and then I was like, wait, how does that work? That doesn't work.
Yeah, like I'm imagining like a Crusaders of Might and Magic type
video. I mean, you could do it.
Like, you could do it that way.
But the game level, you'd have to be like, you know, the Witcher 3 level, like Witcher 4. Like, you'd have to be like really serious.
Oh, if you did that,
it.
I would want it to be more like a Skyrim where you just make your character and go around in this world. And it's like, go to the university and do these quests if you want to do
whatever.
That'd
be so badass.
Yeah, like that. It's a fun world to play in.
I'd spend 3 hours making my lamp.
I don't think they're going to do that. I don't know who Lionsgate's going to get to develop it. Like, they've got to get the right developer for it, because I don't think they've put out any games.
In a real good game like that, you can't. Yeah, you're going to cobble something together 2 years? No, it's going to take years of making assets and development and writing and going from there. And it can be done.
Yeah.
You know, obviously it can be done, but I think the timeline with films and then trying to get the game tie-in like tends to just fuck the game over.
Yeah, there are very few adaptations, I think, that are good.
I think that happened with Battlefront, because they wanted Star Wars Battlefront to come out concurrently with the film.
Yeah.
And the game wasn't done. And they were just like, fuck it. We needed to come out at the same time. And they're just like, fucking put that game out now. And they're like, okay, all right, we'll do it.
Well, it's also EA, and they charged $150 for the full game.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it wasn't even a full game when it came out, really.
Yeah.
So
yeah, I can imagine a video game different ways, but it's probably not the thing they're going to do, and it's going to be a shitty game, is my suspicion, if it ever gets made.
Mm-hmm.
Or it'll be a shitty mobile game and just used for marketing purposes, and then you'll never hear of it a year after the movie or show.
Yeah, shitty marketing game, mobile marketing game that makes tons of money. Ass tons of money.
Yeah.
Playing, make it a tower defense game. Just go for it. Make it a tower defense game, and just with all the other thousands of them. I just can't do it. I just can't get into those mobile games. They're so stupid.
They are.
And to get, like, to win at them, you're just, like, paying, like, $10-15, like, every week.
Yeah.
Just to try to, like, keep ahead. Yeah. No. Fuck that. All right, I think that was us.
That's it. What is the counter at
138?
For this? 138.
If it's still recording, let's check it out.
Okay.
So yeah, that's going to be the Super Back Row Book Club.
Yeah.
Super
Back Row Book Club.
Babysitting Club.
Babysitters Club.
Yeah.
All right, guys. So the next book is Book 2 in the King Killer Chronicle, or Day 2, Wise Man's Fear. We'll put that up as soon as we record it and finish reading it.
Yeah, I was thinking we could just do the Bible, really. to the Bible. Do a book review of the Bible.
No, no, no.
Yes.
No, let's do fictional novels, not...
Whoa, wait. Don't put your foot too far there.
Well, I mean, it's a... I would call that a historic...
Stop
like,
talking.
That would be like us doing like a Quran or...
Oh, gosh, don't do that.
Or something like that. Like, no. That's not... Like, where is the Bible isn't sold in bookstores in the fiction section, I don't think.
I'm really glad I got him to actually go along with this. Like, he's still talking about this. Like, it's serious. No, don't stop talking, Zach. I'm just trolling you, and you're going to walk into a minefield.
No, I'm just saying, if you go into a Barnes & Noble...
He's still walking into it.
There's a religion section. I don't want to do religious books because I don't like them.
And he just set off the grenade.
Bye.
Bye. All right, guys. No, we're going to do the second book. It's going to be great and awesome.
Yeah.
See you later.
Email us. Bye.
Bye.